Hello, one and all. My name is Josh, and you are listening to the Innerbrews podcast, and we have got a dandy of a show. But before we get to the dandy of a show that we have just in store, just down the dial there on your iPhone or whatever device you happen to be listening on, I want to remind you of the Innerbrews Patreon page where you can help support Houston Craft Beer Audio. We've been doing this for a minute, for a while, years now. 8 years? 8 years or so. Audio history of the Houston craft beer scene, and you can help support for as little as a dollar an episode. Just go to patreon.com/innerbrews or innerbrews.com/patreon, or just click that link if you're on the website down below. And any help you can and will and are willing to give is much appreciated. But hey, we're just glad you're listening, so thanks. Whatever you decide to do, tell a friend. If you have no money, just tell a friend. And if you have no friends, just keep listening. I'll be your friend. Here we go.
The following is a presentation of Stewed Productions.
This is Matt at City Acre Brewing.
This is Interbrews.
Y'all can't hear that, so it's kind of weird. We just sit there and it's all quiet. Hayden and Reese, interns, summer interns in the fall. Winter? I guess we're still winter. Hey, Matt.
Howdy.
How's it going?
It's going great.
It's been a while.
It has.
And so glad to be back. I was listening to our previous episode. It's been almost 3 years.
Time does fly. Some days I think it after opening this, it feels both like it was just yesterday, and it also feels like an eternity sometimes.
Yes.
But yeah, it's good. We're at a little over 3.5 years right now, headed towards our 4 year right kind of in the middle of the year. We always kind of say July 4th weekend or the weekend before is our anniversary. So
awesome. Well, I want to get all caught up because I was, like I said, I went back and listened, and it was right at the beginning of spring. And when you're growing things in the ground, that's a fun time. And we talked a lot about that, but it was a little later, so I noticed some things growing already, because it's basically Houston spring already.
Right, and the great thing about Houston is you can grow stuff year-round. Like, you know, I think my favorite thing, it's not particularly popular with everybody, but arugula is the one green that year-round in Houston you can plant and grow. Like plant, grow, and harvest year round.
Yeah.
So January or August.
Now arugula, a little bit of a peppery.
Yeah. Great on pizzas, sandwiches. Maybe not for 100% in a salad, but like some lightness in there.
Little accent.
Yeah.
Almost like a bittering hop for a salad.
Yeah. There you go. I like that. Yeah. Good
is
thinking.
That, is that the purple stuff? Is it purple?
It can have like some purple veins on it, but it's primarily like kind of a medium to dark green.
What am I thinking of? This purple.
Radicchio.
Maybe that's it. That's a fun one to say too.
Arugula, it is. And radicchio. You just wanted to see me, my mouth when I said radicchio. What else? Trip over my words.
What other?
Test my alcohol level already, right? Like, can you say radicchio? So,
if you slow it down, though, that's what one thing I figured out. If you slow it down to half speed, we all sound very.
We might have to do
intoxicated.
That.
Intoxicated.
We might have to do that.
And so, if we get a little too many beers, you just speed it up, and we're fine.
Okay, we're got good it. To go. Got it. We'll do that.
So, what's been going on in the last third of a? Decade.
Third of a decade? Well, a lot. It's been an interesting ride so far. We're still kind of like tucked away in our own little world around here. We've steadily grown every year and feel really good about our production amounts and stuff. We brought on a new sales guy this year who I have to keep telling him to not sell too much beer. Like, stop. Or like one week we'll meet and he's like, can I sell a bunch of beer this week? And I'm like, we've got plenty of beer to sell. And then he just like, he starts texting me with orders and I'm like, stop. Like, you know, we're not a production brewery. We're small. Right. We are primarily focused on tap room sales, which I think is, you know, a lot of breweries that opened in Houston in the past 5 years, with the exception of, you know, like the bigger ones, are primarily taproom sales.
Yeah.
But we are like uber small. We do like, you know, 200 barrels a year.
Yeah.
And I want to say 85 to 90% of that is sold right here in the taproom.
Yeah. It's definitely the way things, I mean, people are doing it, but I think it's good that people are doing it that way. I'm glad y'all are doing it that way. Cause it seems to be, I don't know. I mean, I'm not an economics major, or I just go to a lot of breweries, drink a lot of beer. So it seems to be the way that is the most, I don't know what the word is, feel good. It just seems to be working well.
Yeah, it does. It does. I think so. It's so what the burden is on is for the brew pub, as we are, to bring people there, to get the butts in seats, as you say, in the industry. And versus if you're a packaging brewery, St. Arnold, you know, then while people have found great revenue streams in their tap room for breweries that size, hence St. Arnold's beautiful new beer garden that they opened, primarily they are wanting to be on tap places. And then the kind of burden is on the bar owners to sell the beer, you know. So, but it's a whole nother game, you know, to get into. And, you know, I'm not, you know, we're not really, I don't say we're not interested, but we don't have plans to be in on like store shelves. So we want to be in Kroger or HEB. Like a, that's a even tighter market than going around to the bar scene. And it's like our whole thing, when I first kind of dreamt this up, you know, 20 years ago, when I told my wife on like our second date that I wanted to, you know, open a brew pub. I wanted like the brew pub, like the restaurant, the brewery, and, you know, people come there and you can make whatever you want. It's kind of, to me, it's the home brewer's dream, because that's how I got to making beer, is being a home brewer. And, you know, I want to talk with people about the beer that come in, and I put on whatever I want on tap, you know. Versus, you know, if you distribute, you got to get label approval, alcohol testing, you go through all that, and then you got to find a place for your product. And we've got some great bars that carry our stuff, and we've got great relationships with them, and we love, we kind of basically, when we started selling, I was the original salesman, because we weren't even really sure what the market was for support. Like, we get, people love our beer when they're in here, but yeah, you know, out and about is a kind of a different thing. And so I just started with like going to bars that I went to, and I was like, hey, bartender, you know me, like, would you like to buy some of my beer? And you know, and so we kind of just started with places that we like to go drink, and that's kind of working out from there.
Yeah, it's I'll say, as a podcaster versus say like a radio guy or something like that, the picking your spots really appeals to me. And I think that's, it seems a lot of the, I don't know, not the economy, but well, the economy of beer drinkers, I guess. It just, that seems to be, I don't know, that seems to speak to a lot of people. You know? So yeah, if I were, you know, doing a brewery, it'd definitely be the way. You know, picking your spot seems really, like, there's a lot of freedom there.
There definitely is. It's yeah, and you know, every, what I love is, because, you know, everybody in Houston is still doing something different. Is a lot of people are saying, oh, well, you know, this brewery is going to open up, or did you hear about this brewery that just popped up, and all this. And everybody's always asking questions like, what's your opinion on this brewery or whatever. And to me, I'm just saying, hey, you know, there's plenty of room. Like, we're not anywhere near saturation. And, you know, we'll go a little while and not have anybody open, and then, like, it'll be like 3 in a 6-month period and stuff. But for the most part, everybody still offers something fairly different. And so it's kind of like, what's your mood today? And you pick that brewery and, you know, head on over there.
Yeah, it truly is. I mean, when you look at even if you look at, you know, you can look at Houston breweries. But then if you look at Houston breweries with full-scale restaurants, which is literally a handful, but everybody's serving different food, everybody's taking their own approach. It's like, how does their beer pair with their food and everything? So it's all very different. And Houston's so big.
It is. It is. And people like to eat. And I think, you know, the restaurant was something that's very important for us, because I love to cook as much as, and eat as much as I love to brew beer and drink beer. And I couldn't decide, and you know, it's just one of those things. When even after all this, I think off the top of my head, I'm just thinking, like, Platypus is one of the only other like true brew pubs that I can think of as far as has a restaurant, but and sells most of the beer on site. And then you've got St. Arnold and Carbach as far as breweries with food, and then Buffalo Bayou just opened up their new place, which is great. If you haven't been there, the facility's awesome.
And then local groups about
local group. Yep. And they're
on the cusp.
Yeah, they're very, very close. And James, he, you know, he's obviously been an industry veteran for a long time, and he's got a lot of people around here supporting him. So I'm really excited to see what they start putting out of their kitchen and their tap room.
Yeah, the whole thing, like, when you look around here, it's the coolest part. Well, not the coolest part. I don't know. All parts are cool in their own way, but one of the coolest parts is to see, like, what you've done and what they're doing as far as taking a space that was, like, less than inspired, I guess, before you moved there, and then bringing the inspiration of people come, and then people come to this place for the beer and the food and the community and all of it. And it's like something that just, I don't know, like you had to look a little deeper.
Yeah. You know, it's breweries are traditionally like warehouse district areas, rents cheap. You can get away with a lot of, you know, permitting that you can't. We're in an industrial residential neighborhood over here, and it's very interesting. None of our neighbors seem to care. We're fairly quiet as far as breweries go, and so it's, I think it's always interesting to see the kinds of places that breweries pop up.
Arugula, one of the quietest of the vegetables.
Definitely not a party vegetable.
No. It's like those tomatoes can get a little rowdy.
Celery can get pretty loud, you know, chewing on it in your head and everything. But
is it true that celery is a negative food where it takes as many calories to eat it and chew it as it does that you get from it?
I've heard that, and I don't know. I would love to verify that. I'm not a huge celery fan, but I eat it for that reason. So if I find out that it's like, if that's untrue, then I might just stop touching it. Unless it's covered in blue cheese, obviously, accompanying wings. And I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
Totally.
It's the best stir.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what do I do with this?
For a michelada or a Bloody Mary.
Yes. Oh, man, yeah. Do you have any, like, I don't know, you can do like a beer chilada or something?
We do. We do a michelada here in-house. We make our own mix, and we do a tahine salt rim on it. It's really tasty.
Yeah, like a Sunday morning or whenever. I mean, anytime, really?
Anytime. Anytime people come in and they order it, you know, we've got it available. So
yeah, there's certain, I don't know, though, something like late morning.
I like it when it's, you know, I tend to rise very early in the day, it's one of those, like, we're supposed to meet people for brunch or something, and it kind of gets pushed out, and I hadn't eaten, and I'm starting to get kind of hangry, and, like, next thing I know, I've been up for 6 or 7 hours, I hadn't really eaten anything, because I keep expecting to go to breakfast, then I go for, like, a Bloody Mary or a Michelada, because it actually, you get that instant satisfaction of, like, the savory, and it's, like, you know, got vegetables and like nutrients hitting your body, you know, plus alcohol.
Yeah.
You know, so it's all the above.
It's a little slice of awesome.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm kind of, I love condiments and, you know, pickles and things like that. And so it does get pretty obscene, like some of these drinks, but it's like where you've got like a chicken wing hanging off the side and like, you know, five pickles and some okra. And yeah, I love all those. Cause I can, once again, as soon as I get my drink, I can just start eating at the table before everybody else.
Full wedge of cheese.
Yeah, exactly.
Two slices of bacon.
All those things. I'm down for it.
Is there anything, I mean, any savory type thing that you couldn't, you can put almost anything.
I think if something is done and it makes sense in the context of the drink or the food for that matter, then, I mean, that's how boundaries are pushed. That's how people invent new things. So I wouldn't say that there's anything that's off limits, but it's like, does it make sense with that item?
Like a deviled egg floater.
I just love to. Yeah, I love deviled eggs. So I'm going to say yes to that.
Yeah. Or just on a skewer just above.
Yeah.
I don't know. Something about it floating in the liquid.
I think we could make that work. Just hanging.
Yeah, substance enough. When you do your filling, what, like, jalapenos are great, but like ancho chili, I don't know, all of that
for the deviled egg.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I like you know, chipotle powder has some smoke or like the adobo sauce that the chipotles come in. Yeah. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
It's great for marinating things. And yeah, I always have a can.
Yeah. It's perfect. Love deviled eggs.
Are you hungry now?
A little bit, actually.
I'm sorry, our kitchen is closed today.
That's fine.
It is a Monday, so Monday and Tuesday were closed. And so, yeah, this is our days off to catch up on everything.
Yeah, thanks for coming in on your day off.
Yeah, no problem. I'm here all the time anyway. So,
well, typically on a day off, like a day off in quotes, what are you, like on a Monday, what are you doing? Catching up from the weekend or getting ready for the next?
Yeah, it's one of those things is, you know, we hire people that are great kind of multitaskers isn't the right. I mean, they are great multitaskers, but I guess jacks of all trade or I guess Jills of all trade. If it is a lady, people that are really good at different things, because you never know if you have like kind of this perfect storm that happens occasionally where it's like, you know, somebody calls in sick and somebody's working an offsite event. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, being a small business, we don't have a lot of extra staff around. And so it's like, we'll hire somebody and be like, hey, cool, you can have a shift a week. And they ask for more shifts. And we're like, do you want to mow the lawn? And they're like, okay. And then they end up mowing the lawn one day a week. And then it's like, hey, he's pretty good at that. Do you want to repair picnic tables on Tuesdays? And he's like, yeah, I'll do that. And so it's like, that's kind of how it's like people come in here. And, you know, we get a lot of people who are customers that are interested in working for us. And, it's kind of how you build a good team is you just kind of like, as soon as you realize that people are good at stuff, and I always have this conversation that I have with people about a month in, and if I notice that they're doing well, is I'm like, hey, what do you want to do here? Like, if you had your choice, like, what would you want to do here? And then, you know, I usually get a decent answer out of them. I'm like, well, we can make that happen. Like, you still got to work one bar shift a week because we need you for that, but, you know, you can do some light carpentry or so. There's, you know, it's an acre, so there's like tons of stuff breaking all the time, and you know, kids pulling fence posts down or knocking over the bird bath, and you know, things like that.
The old cannonball into the bird bath. I think the most fun I've had at jobs where I didn't know what I was going to do when I got there that day. Like those early job when I worked for my dad and stuff like that. It's like, all right, just tell me what I'm going to be doing. And it was something new every day. Kind of challenges to figure out what you're good at or what you're really bad at.
Yeah. No, for sure. And, you know, we have a full like workshop here. It's not like organized well or anything. It's like, there's a chop saw laying on the ground and that's where you're going to cut the boards. The table saw's on the other side. And like, there's no dust collection system, but we do have like every tool that you could ever want pretty much. That's and cool. So we also tend to hire these people that are like, well, that part is like $30 at Home Depot, or we've got everything to make it here. And like Home Depot is just right across the freeway. So it's not like we have to drive far. It's like, nah, let's just make it and we'll just make some part. And I don't know. It's just kind of the fun of it. Everybody around here is like that. Our chef is like that. Like, he's in the wood shop if it's kind of slow and the kitchen's got it and he's like, oh, I'm going to go do this. And he'll just go play around in the wood shop and do some stuff. Yeah, we just have a lot of, I mean, everybody, it's like, hey, this light bulb's out. Somebody, I'll change it. You know, it's good and it's bad, but there's nobody that has like super defined tasks. Right. It's like, hey, this person's here this day. They're just going to take care of all these things, you know? So, it's fun. It keeps things interesting for sure.
Yeah, that does that. I wish my job had a workshop, like a wood shop, like, I feel like that would be the best stress reliever. Just go and cut some, that smell.
Yeah.
Cut wood and to feel like you look at it like I did something. I cut that piece of wood. And now they fit together kind of sort of.
I did a thing.
And now it's another thing. Like these benches. You know, that's, you can sit on that.
Yeah. I built all the tables and benches here for the brewery. So
they're super sturdy.
Actually, it's a funny story. We were like the week before we opened, we had a friend who had just moved to town and we were throwing a like, welcome to town party. Brewery had not had customers in it at all, and we were in here and we were, you know, sampling some beers and we were getting, you know, pretty drunk, and I leaned back in one of these benches and something about the way that the legs weren't braced and like the leg snapped off and I fell over. I'm like, okay, well, first of all, everybody kicked me. Like my friends kicked me out of my own bar. They're like, no, you're cut off. Like you're done. And I was like, I'm not that drunk. I just broke the bench. And but I was like, the next day I woke up, I'm like, talked to one of my employees. I'm like, okay, well, we need to brace the benches like this because apparently you can't lean back in them without one of the legs snapping off. And that would be horrible to do as like the first day of business. So, you know, it definitely tested and everything. And we've never had anything like that happen again. So no, yeah, all solid benches. Yeah.
Super sturdy. Girls, what do y'all think? You feel,
get some head nods, thumbs up.
Yeah, it's like my butt right now feels super secure.
Good. That we strive for that out here.
We should probably talk a little bit about beer on a beer podcast.
Right.
The TXPA, right? The pale ale.
Yeah.
Delicious.
Thank you. It's one of our more popular beers. It's one of our standard beers, I guess I should say. So they are our five on the left are our standards that are here all the time, and they represent like 70 to 75% of our beer volume, just those five beers.
Yeah, it's super tasty. I mean, you could just sit there and watch the sunset, drink that beer.
Thanks. It's kind of it's on the border of what would be considered a session IPA, I guess. It's, you know, 5.3%-ish and about 30 IBUs. So it is a pale ale, but, you know, the beauty of having your own place is I could call it a session IPA if I wanted, like have somebody argue with me about it. It's like, no, I'm calling it this, but no, we call it a pale ale. But that was actually our first wedding out here that we ever did. A friend of mine, we were like, he wanted to get married out here. And we're like, okay, we'll do it at cost if you like be our test case kind of thing. And he wanted us to brew a beer for him. And he wanted something that was like drinkable and approachable and something hoppy that you know, people who like craft beer would like, but not off-putting for people who drink, you know, Miller Lite or something.
Right.
And so that's what we came up with, and it's one of our staples as it's really good. It's my wife's favorite too.
It's a great like after work beer.
Thank you.
Or any time Saturday lunch. I bet it goes great with
Actually, there's some people that use that in the Michelada or like the Michelada mix in that beer. It's really good. So it's a citrusy hop, you know, load in there. So
Love it. Super refreshing.
Excellent.
The other beer that we have in front of us, this goes because this is my podcast. I get to tailor the information to support my claims. So don't take this as hard fact, but my claim. So last year was the year of the craft Mexican lager, which as we all know is absolutely what it was because
you say so.
Yes, I'll point to examples and, there you go. But I'm thinking this year, the resurgence of classic like Belgian styles, I just think they're due.
I love a Belgian style. It's actually like when I first started drinking craft beer, when I first started learning that there was other beer besides macro lagers. Yeah. And that's like when I would like stumble upon a bottle shop and there were all these like Chimay Blue. Yeah. And I was like, what is this beer? Yeah. This beer is amazing. And I will always use that as the yardstick, you know, for Belgians. And so, yeah, I love a Belgian beer.
Well, I mean, just the whole, like, I don't know. We've gotten away like the big format bottles with the cork in the cage and the whole deal. I mean, just like, there was something to it, you know? And we have so many good beers coming out where sometimes it takes a while to get back around to some of those classics like Chimay or what's the one with the fish with the purple label? It starts with an O. I'll come up with it here in a second.
Just Omegang.
Well, there's Omegang, but then the one with the fish.
Oh.
A classic, like a Brett beer. In the... It's this one, you know, the way I'm doing my hands.
Oh, yeah, bottle shaped like this.
Or what am I thinking of? It'll come to me in a minute.
Yeah.
Orval.
Oh, Orval. Okay.
You know, which anyway, I'm thinking like, you know, Trappist beers and things like that.
Yeah.
There was just, there's a grandeur to them. They have their certain glass and those big, heavy bottles, and they go so great with food.
They're like these classic beers, and it's something that's so wildly different from what you can get in the state, or you could get in the States. Mm-hmm. You know, in the early 2000s, when I first started drinking beer, legally, that is.
Right.
which, when you drink beer illegally, it's like what you're drinking is Natural Light, because that's all you can get, pretty much. And it's like, you know, somebody swiped it from their uncle or whatever, so...
Yeah. Red Dog.
Red Dog. I do remember there was this really poor period in college. And I was like 19 and my friend and I were like literally pulling couch cushions up for change. Uh-huh. And we scrounged together enough to buy like two Red Dog talls. And like, if you remember Red Dog, it was like Tommy Lee Jones did the commercials for it. And it was a horrible beer. But like you said, you drink what you could get at that point. So...
Yeah, far cry from this, though. So this is a Belgian... Do you say Dubel? Double?
I'm sure I could say Dubel. I'll just say double, you know.
That's what I typically say.
Yeah.
How about Tripel?
Tripel? I could.
Triple.
I like triple. I like saying triple, but I like spelling it, triple, you know, in
the extra P.
Yeah, exactly. Extra P and flipping the L and the E.
Yeah.
You know. That classic Belgian-y way. This was one that we made. I was telling you a little bit earlier about it. It's actually the second runnings of a more alcoholic beer that we were making. And when you're making alcoholic beer, you can either extract a lot of sugars with more water and boil it down a lot, which we still did. But there's a lot of times where you can gain a lot of efficiency just by doing the first beer off the first runnings and the second beer off the second runnings and making them totally different.
Yeah.
And so that more alcoholic beer is going to be aging for the foreseeable future, and we'll figure out whatever it is we're going to do with it. And then, you know, the beauty of this is like this Belgian is ready in like a month. So it's not like we just have a lot of inventory we're sitting on. We're actually getting to sell some beer off of that grain that we made beer off of. So
I love the idea of second runnings. It just seems efficient.
It's fun. Yeah. You know, it's how actually the double and triple were born. So I think it's a great way to do it. And it's something that when I was a home brewer and I was trying to figure out just, you know, not being able to go to a brewing school, it's like I would take, you know, a batch and then split two first runnings in half, uh-huh. and then split two second runnings in half, and I'd have different hop schedules and different yeasts, and so I'd have like all this data on what did what, and then, you know, then try it again, and then try to repeat it, all this, and so it's just very like good way to collect like empirical data on what happens in the brew.
That's the best. I mean, I love that part of home brewing, where, you know, taking the same base and then what can you do differently with it, you know, whether it's pitch a different yeast or different hops or whatever, completely different beers from something that started, you know, from, and then I don't know, there's something about the second, it just seems, I don't know, it's like children, maybe. Like you have one child and then you have another child and they're completely different personality speaking. Anyway, they're not even paying attention, so it's fine.
I think I heard some eyes rolling, maybe.
Yeah, you heard it? Yeah, I heard them too. I hear, it's funny how loud eye rolling can be sometimes. But yeah, no, this is great.
Thank you.
I got it with a steak or something. Like.
Yeah, I love, I'll just sip on a Belgian, and yeah, it's really good. We got a wit coming out too, so because I also, it was one of those, we made the second runnings beer, this double, and then I was like, well, I don't want to just throw this yeast away because, you know, most breweries, the majority of them reuse their yeast several times. Our house yeast, we repitch about 12 times.
Oh, cool.
And, but I had this Belgian yeast and I was like, well, I paid for this yeast and I was like, I'm going to use it again. And our blonde is a very, similar grain bill to a wit beer. Mm-hmm. And so what we did is we made our blonde and sent part of it to one tank, repitched this Belgian yeast in that, and then sent the blonde runnings to the other tank and made our blonde with it.
I would imagine, I don't know this for sure because I haven't, you tell me, you're the expert, but Belgian yeast would kind of lend itself to, you know, using more
yeast,
like, or more generations as far as.
That's hard to say. I don't know about that. I don't know what its viability is long term. So that's some of the things that you come upon at a brewery, where it's like your turnover and how often you brew limits how many strains of yeast you have.
Right.
And so I haven't had enough experience beyond say like two or three generations of Belgian yeast to make a statement on that. Okay. It actually does benefit from underpitching quantities.
Stressing
a little
out.
Bit. Stressing out a little bit increases phenolics. So that cloviness, exacerbated by that, and
it's like training, like you see those the MMA fighters are training with like a snorkel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just like it's just a different result, you know. And it's like it's funny because everybody always thought like that the Belgian brewers, the monks, they're like, oh, they're, you know, they use this like candy sugar and like they're, you know, they're like these expert brewers and stuff. And what you find if you do, you know, read a lot on them, is there a lot of them are just dumping like just regular cane sugar in it. Like it's not all this fancy rock sugars that you can buy as a brewer. I mean, some of them are, so, but like a large majority of them are just like dumping sacks of sugar in there. And a lot of them don't have temperature control either. Mm-hmm. Maybe now that like they're modernizing and you know, everything, but a lot of those flavors that you're getting off of those is they'll pitch it and then let it free rise in temperature. And Belgian yeast, for the most part, can go into the 80s and not have too bad adverse effects.
It was Quebec before Quebec. I don't know.
Yes.
Really? What do you think? Have you used Quebec? Seems all the rage.
I haven't, just because it's like I'm a little set in my ways. And like our house yeast is the perfect yeast for us. Like I can kind of abuse it a little bit and it's totally fine. Like it, you can underpitch it. It's got like a 15 or 20 degree temperature range that it operates in. It'll go down to like 55 degrees and it'll go all the way up to like 72 degrees. And nice. And it drops clear fast. It flocculates well. I can leave it in a keg for 3 weeks and still have some good viability in it. It's, you know, it's really helpful. And I also chose it because no one else in town uses the same strain. So everybody, for the most part, uses like Chico yeast, the California US 01. And if you start with a different yeast, you're going to have a different flavor, regardless of if the grain bill is the same. So
yeah, it's amazing. Like Belgian beers speak to that. It's amazing the change in I don't know, just how much yeast impacts a beer.
Yeah, it's crazy because it's all the same, like, base yeast, you know, it's all the same species, and like aside from like ale versus lager, but you know, aside from that, it is all the same. It's just like, you know, anything could drift in flavor if you basically, we do buy our yeast every 12 generations or so, from Y yeast, but if we just continued to pitch it and like clean it and all that, like in 5 years we would have a completely different yeast. It would just like genetically mutate slowly over the years, and you know, there's a selection that you may not be realizing that you're doing by like pulling yeast off at a certain time, and you're leaving behind yeast that's less flocculent that stays in solution. So there's a lot of factors that go into that. You force like a natural selection on them.
Have you heard of any brewers that have, you know, started with a yeast and then they get new yeast along the way, but they've kept that one going? And
probably Chester King comes to mind. I'm sure there's other ones, but since they've kind of cultivated their own, they started off using like English strains and stuff, but then they slowly moved over the course of the first several years of being open into all wild strains.
Yeah.
And so they're the ones that come to mind. I didn't really have I don't have the patience to truly do that, because it's like, also it's a difficult one, because it's a conscious decision, and it's a program that you almost like you have to cultivate, you know, both the program and the actual product, the yeast,
right?
Because it's like people expect consistency, mm-hmm. right? So if you have your blonde, they expect the blonde to taste like the blonde each time they come in here.
Yeah.
And if they leave a year from now, they come back, they want it to taste like the blonde that they remembered.
Right.
And if you let it drift in flavor, you can, you know, make people upset.
Right. No, we don't want that. But I don't know, just a place like this, you would think they're just, I don't know. Have you experimented with any?
I did. I've tried, you know, since we've got so many like fruiting plants on site, I've done some like wild yeast collection, and I've gotten some okay results. But you know, also at the same time, the majority of our customers are not like, you know, super hardcore beer fan. Like as far as like, you know, they want to come in and they want the beer with like all the 8 descriptors. It's like double imperial milkshake, hazy, blah, 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 stout, you know, or whatever. And, you know, fruited and like, and not to say that we don't do some of those things, but we're almost like, let's limit this to like 2 adjectives to describe the beer kind of thing. So we don't do stuff that's like crazy, because like I said, a lot of people, like our standards are like 70-ish% of our volume. So we've got our specialties where we can do a little bit crazier stuff, but the blonde and the Kolsch represent like 40% of our beer volume here.
Yeah.
And those are our 2 most popular beers.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the people that enjoy the crazy styles are the loudest, for sure. You know, like
very true
on social media, and those styles, they're fun. You know, pastry stout or what? I say, sure. You know, yeah, throw me an extra handful of glitter on that thing and hand it over. I'll try that thing. You know, with a brownie crumble. You know, ring
yeah,
on the
sure,
side or whatever.
Sure.
I'll try it. But I don't know. It's like the Pearl Jam lyrics, changed by not changing at all, right?
Yeah.
And eventually, it's like, oh. There's going to be a group of people in a couple of years. Have you ever tried a Kolsch? It's amazing.
Yeah, and that's kind of like, I guess I've in my own personal palate, have kind of gone all the way around that a lot of brewers do, where in the end, we just want a really well-made lager. Not to say that we're going to reach for, you know, a Budweiser or anything like that, but it's like a good Kolsch or a good, you know, Pils is really hard to beat. And, you know, I like to drink multiple beers at once, and if I have something that's going to kill my palate or that is like sickeningly sweet, just cloying, then I'm not going to want to have more than one or two or even a half of it. And so I like beers that I can sit there and drink for a long time, and I want another, and that tends to be the lighter styles. And you know, for us, that also works well with our model, because we're a brew pub, and so we need to have a fast turnaround on our beer. So like our blonde is 8 to 9 days kettle to keg, and it's done. So it's really fast, and stuff like that. So we kind of, that's something you have to balance, is like, what's your tank time versus like getting to the taps and stuff.
Yeah. I love snappy, like pilsners.
Just and we would make more of those kinds of things, but that's, you're talking like 6 weeks in the tank, and you can't make anything else. And so we'll do them, but we really have to time things right, you know? And so that can be difficult.
Well, since it's been, I don't know, I guess right at 3 years, and that was, you know, a few months after you guys opened. Has there been anything like that you look back now, like, oh, that's hilarious that we tried that? Was there any like stories where you're like, that was, what were we thinking? Or, you know, something like where you learned from you can call it a mistake, but something that didn't pan out exactly like.
You mean like beer wise or like either, just business wise?
Either way.
And that's a tough question. Are you about to ask what my greatest weakness is?
Yeah. No, there are none.
Definitely none. you know, that's a difficult one. And I guess I'm going to, in not having something that comes to mind right away, it's just one of those, I don't regret anything that we've done because it's kind of like, this was an idea we had and we gave it our best shot, or, you know, this is what we did with the best information we had at the time. You know, any small business is going to stumble a little bit, and we've definitely had our ups and downs. You know, we got flooded by Harvey. Mm-hmm. There some days, you know, because we are a little bit of a remote location, some days it pours rain and your customers are, you know, not going to come out in that.
Right.
And so, you know, there's days like that. But, you know, I think it's just it's those learnings that kind of propel you as a business. And it's like, well, let's not do that again. Or it's like, it's really like, if we're going to try to execute this event, let's put all of our promotion behind it, and it's really just making sure that we learn. Mm-hmm. You know, if you learn each time, then there's no real regrets. Yeah. In that, because it's like, now every time we have an event, we have a document that's like, you know, 2018, and it's like, this was Valentine's Day 2018, this is how fast the tickets sold, this is like all this other stuff. Yeah. And so we just keep track every year, like, because you the first year or two you think, oh, we'll remember what happened last year, and then you get a year and you know, how many beers later, right, then you're like, I seem to have lost those parts of my brain cells.
Right.
So.
And it also comes around so quickly. It's like, oh, you're talking about, like, I feel like Christmas was 2 days ago.
Right.
But Valentine's literally
right around the corner.
Yeah. And so like this year, what are y'all doing for Valentine's Day?
Well, actually it's one of those, like, when sometimes things kind of like mount up on each other and we're like, oh, that's going to be a crazy week. So it's like that whole week for us is nuts. Cause we do a Galentine's Day event. Uh-huh. So I don't know if you're familiar with Parks and Recreation, yeah, the show. And so we do a Galentine's Day on February 13th, which, uh-huh, is a Thursday. And we've got a little Sebastian that comes and you can take pictures with him. And we've got tons of like specialty cocktails. We make beer-based cocktails or champagne cocktails. So we've got that. And then we've got Valentine's Day the next day. So we've got a 4-course beer pairing in the house, our Victorian manor on the property. That's in the evening. And then the next day, Saturday, we have a party booked here. And then Sunday we have our Cellar Bounty, which is something that we did for the first time last year. Mm-hmm. That was a big success. And I, you know, it's something that, I mean, I really hope we get the same weather we had last year. It was like absolutely gorgeous. It was like 60 degrees, clear and crisp. And it was on a Sunday and it was beautiful. And the Cellar Bounty is when we release a bunch of beers made with ingredients that we grew on site. Mm-hmm. And so some of them are very limited. Some, mm-hmm, of them it's like, well, we got, you know, 60 bottles out of this. Mm. And they're not expensive. You may pay $10 to $15 for a bottle, but it's like, that's the only time that beer's ever going to exist.
That's cool.
Because it is based on the grapes that we grew here, or, you know, the oranges that we grew here, or, mm-hmm, we've got about 60 perennial fruit bearing plants on site. Mm-hmm. A bunch of citrus, we've got pecans, wine grapes, lemongrass, blueberries, a bunch of stuff. And so I'm really excited that's coming up. We're working on that. We've got one of our more popular beers is our Suspiria, which is a blood orange blonde. Mm. And
do you have a blood orange tree here?
We do. It's right on the other side of the kitchen, actually.
We've got a little one. Well, I mean, it's about as tall as Hayden here. It's we get fruit twice a year.
Y'all, oh, nice. No, we actually had, it was an issue, like, we didn't get fruits for the first several years, and then we got it 1 year, and then for, like, the past 4 years, there's been, like, a weird late freeze, and, mm-hmm, we'll, like, lose all our blossoms, and, mm-hmm, then, so this is the biggest harvest we've ever had, so we've got a lot of blood oranges right now, so
Planted
we're going to make
it.
What's What's that?
Is it planted in the ground?
Oh, yeah. It was actually the first tree that I think I ever planted out here when I bought the property, which will be 11 years coming up this summer.
Cool. Yeah. Those blood oranges, man, they're so good.
Oh, they're really good. So, yeah, I'm excited because we're going to do an imperial version of it this year.
Yeah.
So it's going to be like a 10% imperial Suspiria blonde.
There's a something about when you get that fruit that grew on your own land and you saw it, you know, it's from a blossom and then those little green little, you know, things.
Yeah, the
pop,
little, yeah.
You know,
little peas.
Out. Yeah, they pop out and then you say, all right, that, you know. Then people ask, hey, why you got a lot of limes there? It's like, oh, no, those,
yeah.
Those are oranges. It's fine. But it's when you see them hanging and you try it and like it's the sweetest fruit you've ever, just because it's not just, I mean, blood oranges are just delicious, but the fact that it's your tree and you saw it grow, I don't know, there's just something, and then you put it in the, it's just cool.
Yeah, oh, it's great. And we, you know, we make a lot of cold brew coffee here. The employees just, they drink a lot, and we're starting to distribute it a lot to various places around town, so we end up with a lot of coffee grounds, and they're very high in nitrogen and acidity, and there's stuff that's things that citrus trees love, so okay. We get coffee goes right there. So all of our stuff is grown with organic methods. We're not a, you know, quote unquote, officially organic establishment, right. But we don't really use pesticides or anything like that. And so our fruit isn't always the prettiest, but it's a cosmetic thing, yeah. Really. And so it probably wouldn't do too well at the farmer's market, but you know, it's very tasty and definitely, then we don't have to worry about any sort of like stuff on the fruit mm-hmm. that you would if you had to buy it in the store.
So I got to pick your brain about blueberries. We've planted blueberries in the past with mixed success,
mm-hmm.
basically none. So blueberries, if I were going to plant some in my backyard, what am I looking for, sun wise soil wise
well, with any fruits really, you're looking 4 to 6 hours minimum for sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
Blueberries are interesting in they like well-drained soil.
Okay, so
raised bed for sure. They like a lot of organic matter and they don't like unnatural fertilizers.
Okay.
So they don't grow by Miracle-Gro and sprinkle it on it. Like Microlife is a great all-purpose organic mm-hmm. fertilizer. It's actually made in Houston. You can get it like Wabash and stuff. It's awesome. But cottonseed meal is very high in nitrogen and I can't remember. I can never remember off the top of my head, but it's either bone meal or blood meal. It has high phosphorus, good for fruiting. And so those two things, plus a little bit of sulfur or gypsum for acidity and loosening the soil.
Sure.
And then it's like drip irrigation. So it's like if it stays like hydrated, but not wet because of the raised. And basically you kind of would treat them like an azalea.
Mm.
So acidified soil, well-drained.
Do they like the coffee grounds?
They do like coffee grounds. Yeah, that would be considered a
like
natural
flavored,
source.
Flavored coffee?
Yeah, I don't know about that, actually. You know, the oils might do something. But
yeah, make it some hazelnut in your
blueberries. Exactly. Some hazelnut blueberries. Some that delicious. Sounds pretty good, actually.
Yeah,
I would eat that.
I wonder if that's I don't know.
And I think you have to kind of time the fruiting a little bit because they're a fairly... new cultivar, I guess, like it's especially ones that are for warmer weather, like in the Houston area that mm-hmm. need fewer chill hours. They were like such a wild plant for such a long time. They benefit from having a different variety in their presence.
Okay.
So if you have like we have like 8 of one kind mm-hmm. and the 9th one is a different variety
mm.
and they all fruit around the same time. So there's like early summer, midsummer and late summer ones.
Okay.
So yeah. Blueberries can be a little finicky and complicated, but...
How's your bee game?
Bee?
Yeah.
I love them. We don't keep them here, but I would love to, but that's just like one more thing to keep up with.
Nothing says come out to have a beer, you'd get chased by bees.
Yeah, for sure. We've talked about it. There's some customers of ours that, you know, had an apiary, and we talked about moving some over, and it just never really happened. But it's something that I would love to do, but have absolutely no bandwidth or energy to do.
Yeah.
It's like, I would love it if we could get honey that then we put in a beer, but like the quantity that we would need, we need 5 to 10 gallons at least to make a difference in the beer. And that's like probably like 400 hives or something. I don't know. Probably not that much, but
we,
a lot.
We don't have bees at the house. We have dirt daubers.
Oh, yeah.
Honey's not near as good.
No, definitely not.
Kind of muddy. Real earthy tones.
Yeah.
Not very good. Stay away from that dirt dauber honey. So anyway, so... Let's look into the future. I mean, you know, it's been 3 years since we last chatted. I don't want it to be another 3 years before we chat again. But another, you know, as things go, you know, what do you see? Like, is there anything you haven't done yet that you want to do, or something that you're really, really enjoying that you want to make sure you keep doing? That's
You know, what's really interesting is this is kind of going to be a big year for us, because it's just kind of like, I feel like it's where we finally hit our stride. And I will say, as of today, we just paid off our last loan payment. Awesome. Today. So like, that's definitely something worth celebrating.
On the property.
Basically, you know, on the build out and the equipment. Okay. And stuff like that. I own the property outright. Yeah, okay. You know, and
that's big.
Yeah, so it is. And so it's kind of like you don't have that thing holding, like hanging over your head. Yeah. Anymore. And so it's kind of like, now we can kind of do whatever we want. Like, we can get a little risky with stuff. We can, you know, I've kind of spent this last year, like kind of being less micromanaging and letting my employees kind of give their ideas and kind of forge their own path and be like, I want to do this thing. And then me being like, well, let's figure out how you get to do that thing. And like, supporting them and growing it how they want it, and giving them a lot of ownership in those things. It's like, as far as events and, like, you know, both, you know, on-site and off-site events and things like that. And really kind of having a say in how the business goes, as far as like a concept. And I don't think we're looking to open another store, or anything like that anytime soon. In fact, Brock Wagner, I was at the One Pot cook-off yesterday.
How was that?
It was awesome. Yeah, we do it every year. Yeah. My friends and I, this is like the 13th year we've done it. Yeah. So, and he was like, did I hear a rumor that you guys are moving? And I'm like, no. So, and he's like, I don't know who that would have been then. He's like, I swear it was you. And I'm like, no, we're not moving anytime soon. It's like, you know, we thought about like, oh, what if we opened a different location somewhere? And it's like, what would that be? Because kind of our thing is like, we've got a big piece of land right in the middle of the city. And it's like, where else would we do that? Like, Katy or Sugarland, or it's just, I don't know. It's not really the same to me. And so I would rather reinvest in this property here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it came to it, just like buy up more land in this neighborhood and make it a bigger complex and like make it this destination that people come out to. So as far as looking to the future, it's really, I'm not discounting anything. It's 'cause we kind of made all of the styles that we could have made. I think we produce almost, we put out a new beer like every other week. Wow. Pretty much. So our first year we did like 27 beers, and we pretty much match that every year. And so we know what works, what is like not very popular. And then we just kind of, you know, what do we have to work with seasonally? And so kind of nothing's off the table. We're just kind of seeing how it goes.
That fact that you are in such a great position, just to, you know, it's just whatever you want to do. I thought there was a little more bounce in your step.
Probably. Yeah. It was, it's a good place to be in. But also, you know, that coupled with having a great staff, and the staff really loves working here. In fact, I have to tell people to leave, like go home, like, go enjoy someplace that isn't here, like get some perspective, because I always feel like if I go on vacation or just get away from the brewery for a while, instantly my brain starts working and it's like, oh, these people do this thing this way. Mm-hmm. I never thought about that. And then, then it kind of, you come back with these fresh ideas and, you know, you get a little perspective, by moving, getting out of the business for a little bit. And so that's kind of been this past year for me, is stepping out, you know, being more, kind of the, I guess I've always been the face, but being kind of like out and about and like talking to people and, you know, working on, you know, maybe some collaborations or, you know, just, you know, helping grow the business organically while the employees get to kind of thrive in an independent environment without like a boss looming over them.
Yeah.
You know?
Now that's, I hear that, like, especially when you're, you know, new breweries, it's everything and always just in it, you know, trying to get everything moving and going, and to be able to take a step back is, you know, and look, take back and look at what you've got. This is,
well, and yeah, it's interesting the way that happens. You know, I was actually, the way that things happened due to like some staffing issues and stuff, it wasn't like my first choice for like some things to happen the way they did. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those beautiful like moments where you're not getting what you want actually turns out to be a good thing. It's like we had like a couple people leave like right in a row, and it just like completely just threw everything up in the air. And it was like we kind of ended up being forced to restructure how things are done here and like people's responsibilities. And it ended up where everything just kind of, when the dust settled, everything worked much better.
Yeah.
And we never would have done that if it would have been just like one person leaving, because we would have just replaced that one person. And when it ended up being like three people, like three and a half people leaving at once, just for various reasons, like life and all that, it just ended up where we were kind of forced into this situation, and it worked out really well for us.
Yeah. And yeah, well, yeah. And if you're a half person,
I'm in a halftime person, not like not like less than, you know, 4'11" or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
When we don't employ child labor, by the way.
When they talk about people just being all arms and legs, like guys going through puberty. He was literally just all arms and legs. He was a half person. Was, yeah, I don't know. Sorry. Bad jokes. But no, that's cool. That, I mean, when I hear that, all of that, everything you've been talking about, that makes me think that the future is very bright. For just from an outsider looking in, just, I don't know, from somebody that just observes for, I guess you can call it just observing and talking, flapping my gums for a living.
Well, it's good. You know, I think, like I said, everybody that works here likes being here, as far as I can tell. You know, everybody's got good ideas, and I will just like, you know, tons of credit to my employees. Like it may have been like my dream and my concept and my like blood, sweat and tears all at the beginning, just trying to get this thing off the ground and like figuring out what works. But like they've really kind of taken up the mantle and like run with it. And they've there's really kind of, we're at the point where like we might have somebody join our team and we're like, that person's not going to work out. You know, and they, and not that they're going to get fired, but they kind of realize like within a week that they don't really fit in with the culture, because we're like very specific. We're like, do it yourselfers. And just like, everybody's got to be like, have a good attitude and like be nice and like, you know, just contribute and like be positive about things and like try to figure out different workarounds for stuff. And it works really well. And we couldn't do it without our employees. All of them work extremely hard. And, you know, it's one of those, I wish I could be paying everybody $1 million kind of thing. And, it is a bar still. So we're lucky enough to make our own beer. So we get a complete say in what we serve. Oh, hey, that reminds me. Okay. I've got something like a misstep, I guess. Okay. You know, you were asking for things, like all of a sudden it just hit me as soon as I said that. So not to backtrack, but
no, it's good.
I wouldn't say even like a misstep. How did you phrase your question? It was like something that we wouldn't do again, or
yeah, just not like a lesson you learned or something that once you got through it.
Okay.
Whatever you're about to say, say that.
So I will say this. So we had this idea that we'd open and we would have, you know, like one side of our tap wall was going to be our stuff. And then the other half was going to be just our favorite stuff from around town. Mm-hmm. And we did that for maybe the first 6 months, and we could not move other people's beer. Like it was great, you know, but it's like, you want to keep, you know, we'll have like Yellow Rose on tap, and it's like that beer should be very fresh. You know, it's a great, you know, considered one of the best IPAs in Texas.
Yeah.
And, sought after outside of Texas. But it was like, we were having a hard time selling other people's beer because we had our, people wanted to visit a brewery. Mm-hmm. And I get why some people may do it. And we did it because you have to have a beer and wine license as a brew pub. So we can buy wine and beer and stuff. So we do sell other people's wine now. But like the first 6 months we were just like, I don't know, man, like we would sell it, but it represented like, you know, 5 to 10% of our alcohol sales. It was really low. Mm-hmm. And we kind of did it as a start off, like as a way, is like, hey, we don't know anything about beer production, like production schedules. You know, I can say, oh, you know, it's a lot different from home brewing. It's like the most I would get is like, I'm going to brew for my birthday party next month, you know, and it's like, I can hit one batch on one date kind of thing like that. But managing different days and dealing with a natural product, we were like, well, let's have these other beers on tap just because we don't know what we're going to be able to produce and stuff like that. And they didn't sell. And so when we decided to start distributing, when brew pubs were allowed to distribute in 2014, we started distributing. And one of the weird rules is you cannot sell other people's beer if you self-distribute. Yeah. And we're too small. There's no way a distributor would ever want to sell our product. Like, right. It's not worth it to them. Especially if like I treat them like my sales guy, where I'm like, no, you can't sell any beer this week. You know, that, a distributor would absolutely hate that. You know, it's like, you're going to steal our blonde from the tap room. You know, our customers expect to have the blonde. We can't sell it. So now we just like maintain accounts that we know that we can supply them, like, cause we've got our regulars and they order on a pretty good schedule. And so, you know, we're like, well, we sold everything. I remember it was right around the time that Carbach like sold was we were like, nope, we can't do this. We're done, you know, cause our Silver Eagle rep was coming around and like, hey, you guys want some Carbach? We're like, we normally would. And I promise this isn't over the merger acquisition thing. It's like, we're not selling anybody's beer anymore. So, that's kind of, I think probably the only thing is like that didn't work out. Otherwise, you know, you get stuff that you put on the menu that doesn't sell and you cut it later, but that's probably about the only thing. So sorry to answer your question like 30 minutes after you asked it.
But totally worth the wait.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
That's not a regret I would ever, like if somebody asked me and, you know, what were the regrets of the podcast that you did with Matt? I'd be like, not asking that question, and that's not on the list.
As long as you answered timely, right? You know, within the confines of the podcast. Yeah. You know, don't do like an addendum later. Like, actually, I thought of it.
Send me an MP3 file.
I was in the bathtub and I was thinking. And
That might be a great podcast. I mean, do it by Skype or something.
Yeah, for sure. From the bathtub.
From bathtub to bathtub, okay, or something. Just everybody's super relaxed.
Sure.
It could work. I mean, recording equipment. I don't know. Maybe logistically.
Yeah. Electricity.
Okay. Maybe not.
Yeah.
All right. We'll look at it.
Get into that next episode. But we're not going to be in the bathtub together, probably.
What size bathtub?
It's pretty small.
Okay. I mean, we can wear trunks.
Yes. This is going a weird place. I didn't expect it to go there.
I'm just saying, until everybody's comfortable.
Yes. Okay. There you go.
That's my main
thing. A full tuxedo for me then.
Sure.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. If that's... Super formal.
Very formal.
Not very clean, but super
formal. They say that about me. I'm a very formal guy.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Tuxedo in the bathtub. That's the name of a beer.
Yeah.
Shower tuxedo. I don't know. That's weird.
The brand Chubby's does make like a pool tuxedo. It's like a terry cloth tuxedo jacket. Yeah. It's pretty amazing, actually.
Okay.
If you're in the market for that kind of thing.
Why not? Well, okay. Well, I feel like that's a pretty good place to...
That's a good place to stop. We made it awkward enough that we could just end.
I think the perfect amount of awkwardness.
Okay, cool.
Girls, do you have any questions? No. Okay, no. We answered them all? Good. Thank you all for being so quiet over there. People didn't even know y'all were here. I could have said nothing.
They won't believe
that
they were here.
Yeah, they're thinking, why is he talking to the people not saying anything? did we get our homework done? Close enough? All right, we'll figure it out. Well, Matt, thank you so much, sir.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you coming out.
Yeah, let's do it again a lot sooner.
Yes, definitely. Hey, we got a 4-year anniversary coming up in into June, and
I'll be here.
Let's see. Like I mentioned, all the Galentine's Day fun, and then another shameless plug for we do movie night. We're doing an 80s comedy series.
What did I see y'all have?
We've got When Harry Met Sally this Friday on the 31st. It's basically the last Friday of every month between now and June. So we've got like Breakfast Club. Mm. We've got Back to the Future. Not in this order. But it's a lot of fun. It's all online. But yeah, I'm really excited. My wife is a professional film critic. And we both love movies. And so she programs all the movies here and stuff. So they're a lot of fun.
How do you become a professional film critic? Is there like certifications?
No, just a lot of hard work. She basically worked really hard and reviewed movies for free for a long time until she'd built up her own website and then was able to show it to somebody. And and just springboarded her career. And so, professional movie critic and movie magazine editor also, and co-owner in a brewery.
That's cool. That'd be a fun podcast. Maybe we just do a movie episode.
Sure. We good.
Let's do that.
All right. I'm ready when you are.
All right.
Well, we've got all of them planned out for the next 6 months. So
let's do that. Let's come up. Let's do a movie episode just talking about and like pairing beers.
I would love that because we also have themed food for each of these. Like we've got When Harry Met Sally, we were doing Popperkash.
Yeah.
If you're familiar with that, like I'm trying to think of all of them. Like Back to the Future, we're doing like diner food. Like we're doing like milkshakes and tater tots. And of course, you know, like Pretty in Pink has the character Ducky. So we're doing like duck fat fries and Trading Places. We're doing like a smoked salmon. I don't know if you remember that scene where he's like, dressed in this really gross Santa. Dan Aykroyd's in this really gross Santa outfit. Uh-huh. He's got like a stuffed salmon that he stole from a party, stuffed in his coat, and he tries to eat it, and his like fake beard is like all caught in his teeth, and he's eating it. It's really gross.
Yeah.
But we're doing smoked salmon as real, and Chef is really good with smoked salmon because he's from the Pacific Northwest. So we're doing fun like food for each one, and then there's like, you know, if you come to multiple ones, there's like a punch card you can get like free stuff when you show up.
Oh, that sounds fun.
So yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Sounds fun. I want to do that.
Yeah, it's kid friendly too, so you can bring the girls.
There you go. You wanna come watch some movies?
Sure.
Okay. Cool. Huh? Well,
they're good. I promise.
We'll discuss it on the way home. Some of them you've seen. You've seen Back to the Future.
Yeah.
We'll discuss it on the way home. Okay. All right. Well, we'll wrap there. And Matt, thank you so much. Everybody, come visit City Acre. It is. We're stepping into prime outdoor beer drinking season.
Totally.
Here in Houston for the next, I don't know, 5 months
yeah,
or so,
yeah.
But, you know, 5-6 months. And it's just, this is the place you want to do it. You want to put this on your list. And if you're in town, it's not far from anywhere. I mean, I don't know if people think about coming over to 59 as much if they're on the other side, but do it.
Well, and I always tell people a couple things that brings them out here is that we are only 8 minutes north of downtown on 59.
Yeah.
We're on the way to the airport. So yes. People stop here either on the way out or on the way back, or if they're waiting for a husband or wife,
yes,
you know, they'll perfect. Hang out here. It's better than our chef calls it the best cell phone lot in town, uh-huh. You know, rather than waiting up at the airport. And on top of all that, we're like across the freeway from Spindletap.
Yeah.
So people, a lot of times they'll go to Spindletap and then they come over here,
yeah.
You know, for the second part of the day. So yeah, very convenient.
Yes. And come see what's growing, see what's, you know, about to get harvested or has been harvested, all that. You got to come and see it and try the beers and hang out and just feel the vibe. That's a good place, Matt.
Thank you so much.
I love this place.
Oh, thanks.
All right. Well, we'll wrap there. So for Hayden and Reese, for Matt, City Acre, I'm Josh. Thanks for listening, everybody. This is Interbrews.
This is Interbrews.
And this is where I remind you about that that Patreon page, you know, if you want, please. Okay, enough begging. Goodbye, everybody.
The preceding has been a presentation of Stewed Productions.